comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here for talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. This is K-Files night. That means that immediately after the show, I will begin sending out this week's newsletter. We call it K-Files, and it's free. And if you're new to The Kevin Smith Show, or if you're just one of those procrastinators, let me remind you again, it is free. And all you have to do is go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and you can subscribe in a matter of seconds, literally seconds. And there's time. If you subscribe right now, there is time for you to get on the list for this edition of the K-Files, so be sure you do that. In celebration of our nation's birthday, which will happen on Sunday, I hope you enjoy tonight's show on our video channel for free. Now, if you're one of those people that goes to a website, you see what's there when it opens up, and you don't look around at all, you just see what is there, then you've missed it. But it's not too late. You can go back, open kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down just about a half inch, and you'll see the notice where you can watch for free. And in fact, the screen for watching free is embedded right there in the main page. And we invite you to enjoy it for free as part of our celebration of July the 4th. July the 4th is when we celebrate our nation's birthday. All right? Now, last week, we attempted to have a guest on the show by the name of Edgar Evans Casey. He, among other guests last week, had problems with the telephones. It's a weird thing. There's nothing wrong with their telephone, and there's nothing wrong with ours. But somewhere out there in between, interference takes place. Anyway, he very graciously accepted the invitation to give it another shot for tonight. He is my guest tonight. He is the youngest son of one of the most prolific and accurate seers in history, and certainly one of the most famous, if not the most famous, of the 20th century. So we're looking forward to being able to talk with Edgar Evans Casey tonight, and we will, of course, open up the telephone lines in the second half of the show so that you can call in with your questions or your comments. And as always, we will also have the flash message option open for those who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada. If you're in the USA or you're in Canada, we have telephone lines for you, and we will even pay for the call if you need us to, and we provide a toll-free line for that, all right? We'll be back with Edgar Evans Casey right after this.
Right under the rain.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening tried to be my guest last week, and we worked hard at it, but there was just something weird happening on the telephone. His name is Edgar Evans Casey, and let me just check very quickly, Mr. Casey, are you with me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, outstanding. Maybe we'll get through this show without someone interfering with our phones. We're certainly going to try. Edgar Evans Casey, folks, is the youngest son of the famous clairvoyant Edgar Casey and his wife Gertrude. He's a graduate of Duke University, graduated in 1939 with a Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering, and he is a registered professional engineer. He's married, he's the father of two children, and chairman of the Board of Trustees of the Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is the organization that has carried on the study of the work of Edgar Casey. Mr. Casey, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. We're delighted that you're here, and I want to say thank you for being so gracious about the technical difficulties and being willing to come back and be with us.
Well, I'm certainly glad to do it.
All right, now, let's just sort of get our feet on the ground with, let's go back to, what year was it when Edgar Casey passed from this life?
I think it was in 1942.
Okay, so you had graduated from college by that time.
Graduated in 39, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Zach was in the Army in the World War II.
When he passed? Yeah. All right, now do you have any siblings, any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have a son and a daughter, and the daughter has one son, and my son has two sons.
Yes, but do you have any brothers and sisters?
They've grown up, and so we have grandchildren.
But what about you? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I had a brother, Lynn Casey, and he died about 10 years ago, about 20 years ago, really.
When you were growing up, obviously your father, Edgar Casey, was very involved in the work that he did. Were you ever a witness to him when he was in one of the trances?
Yes, I used to listen at him. My brother and I both used to listen at him while we were both home.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was always interesting to hear what he said. Dad didn't remember anything that he said in this trance-like state. It was taken down in shorthand by a stenographer and typed up later.
Did you ever hear him say anything that really surprised you?
Yeah, I heard a lot of things. It was amazing how well he could describe a person's body and what was wrong with it. The majority of his readings were called physical readings that were on the health of an individual or the problem an individual was having. There were about... after he'd been giving his readings for a number of years in the 20s, I think he started in the before 1900, but before I was born. But he was giving a reading one time, and somebody asked him a question, and he said, "Well, that came from what happened in a past life," and he gave the first life reading, and the man was very interested in it, and. Of course, all the family was, and so everybody in the family had a life reading then. So there are about 50 to 60% of the readings are physical readings, and about 20% of them are life readings, and about the other 20% are miscellaneous under everything under the sun.
You know, being the son of someone like Edgar Casey, and I have to say, I don't know of anyone else that's like Edgar Casey, but being the son of someone as famous as he has to be kind of a double-edged sword, both a kind of a blessing and a little bit of a curse. in that there's no anonymity. Did you ever feel sort of put upon by the public?
Well, nobody really knew what Dad was doing when he first moved, when we moved to Virginia Beach. We moved there, and I was born in Selma, Alabama, when Dad gave readings early. I guess to explain how he got around, it would take a minute to run back over what he was doing. Now, of course, this was before I was born, because I was born in Selma, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But he was born in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and he started his readings there by getting sick himself, and he got lost his voice. And there was a hypnotist in town, and he'd tried all the doctors in town. Nobody could do anything with him, and this hypnotist gave him a suggestion to go to sleep, and under this hypnotist's suggestion, he could talk a little bit, but when he came out of it, he couldn't talk. And the hypnotist said, "Well, maybe you could tell me what's wrong with you." And his dad gave a reading on himself and said that was due to congestion in his throat. And he says, "We'll clear this up." And he turned real red and coughed and woke up, and he could talk. So he really cured himself in the first life reading. Well, there was a physician there that was interested in the hypnotist, and when he realized what he was doing, he wondered whether he could give readings for some of his patients. The doctor did, and he tried it, and Edgar Casey could, and that was his beginning of the physical readings. The life readings began when somebody later on in about 21, and that was when a person asked a question about the cause of something in this life, and Casey said, "Well, it was due to so-and-so in this past life," and he described his past life. And when he woke up, well, everybody was kind of curious, and also they didn't know what to think about reincarnation, because none of them had really heard about it or knew about it. And Dad always said that if he ever gave a reading that hurt anyone, he would quit giving them. And he didn't, so he never said, and he never did hurt anyone at any of his readings. And so he was survived pretty good. But what had happened in Kentucky, in some of his physical readings, people would ask questions at the end about what they should do for the person, and then somebody would ask a question about, well, who's going to win this football game, or who's going to win this horse race, and Dad would answer much to their profit. But when he woke up, he wouldn't feel right. He would feel nauseated or sick at the stomach or a headache, and he knew something was wrong, but he didn't know what it was. And when he found out what people were doing, asking other questions like that to try to make money, he said, "I'm through with this. I'm giving this up, and I'm going to move." And he moved to family to Selma, Alabama, and opened a photographic studio. And he was a very successful photographer. And his wife, Gertrude, my mother, used to color some of the pictures and help him in the studio. And he would have probably continued to be a photographer if my brother hadn't dropped a match in a partially filled can of flashlight powder, and it flared up in his face and burned his eyes and his face terribly, and the doctors wanted to take out one eye, and they said they didn't know whether he'd recover or not. And Hugh Lynn said, "Daddy would give me a reading." And Dad did give him a reading, and it described what to do, and about 2 weeks a scar kind of came off all of his face and he could see. So all the doctors were really surprised, and then Dad realized that maybe he ought to get back to giving readings, because it was a help for people. And that's when he started giving again in Selma, Alabama.
I have read reports, old newspaper reports, and things that were written about Edgar Casey. And somewhere in all of that reading, I ran across a comment by some medical doctor that the medical readings were phenomenal, in that the correct medical terminology was used, and everything was described as if it were a seasoned physician or surgeon. And they were amazed at this because Edgar Casey did not have a formal medical training.
That's right. He really didn't have a college education. He was had about a equivalent of a high school education, and he didn't know medical terms, and he knew a lot more when he was in this asleep, in this hypnotic state, rather than he did when he was awake, particularly about medicine and people's problems.
Did you or your brother, either one of you, ever exhibit any psychic abilities?
People always ask us that, and the answer was no. Neither Hugh Lynn nor I had any of the abilities that Dad had. And we've had readings on any problems that we had, but we didn't have any ability ourselves, either one of us.
Now, some of the most famous of his readings, and by famous I mean they've been made famous because other people have picked up on them and written about them and often quoted them and so forth, had to do with Atlantis. And he said that Atlantis would be, and these are my words, I don't know any other way to describe it, but it would sort of be rediscovered. But it would happen off of the coast of off the coast of the Bahamas. And you've written about Atlantis. Now,
yes, I was very interested in it because my life reading said that I'd had an incarnation there of one or two, but it was a long time ago, and nobody believed when the reading. Nobody believed some of the life readings when they talked about Atlantis. But other people had written about it, and Plato had written about it. And trouble was that it didn't exist anymore. It was a continent that existed, according to Casey, in the mid-Atlantic between North and South America, and the near Bimini, which is about 60, 80 miles off the coast of Florida. And it existed as long as several hundred thousand years ago, and a couple of hundred thousand. It said that it developed a civilization about 50,000 years ago, and it there was a destruction of part of it. And then about 28,000, there was another destruction when the continent was broken into islands. And then in about 20,000 years ago, at B.C., its last island sank. Now, I just thought it was interesting, and I just tried to get a look at all the life readings. There are about 2,500 of them, and that I wanted to look at the ones that mentioned Atlantis. And so I spent I thought I could do it in a month or two, but it took me about a year to go through all the life readings that Casey gave. And this was, of course, after Dad had died, and this was in the 40s. But I did get through putting down all the life readings, and I wrote what it said about each incarnation of anybody in Atlantis, and tried to get it in chronological order. And that's where I got the dates of 50,000 B.C. and 28,000 and the last sinking in 20,000. And it really made sense. The interesting thing was that none of the life readings talking about incarnations in Atlantis ever contradicted each other or made a difference in the the data, what he said about it. But it was a highly, according to Casey, it was a highly technical civilization. I mean, they had at one time they had aircraft and rays and like you see in science fiction movies now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was quite a civilization.
Well, these life readings that mentioned Atlantis were spread out over how many years?
From all the time that, Dad gave readings before 1921. I think the first life reading mentions Atlantis was 1920, a life reading given in 1921. And they were mentioned in all the life readings from then until the time he died. And, of course, they were more physical readings given than life readings, but the life readings seemed to increase because people got interested in them. And not everybody that had a life reading had an incarnation in Atlantis, but there were a number of them. So it was possible to write down, to get a sort of a history of Atlantis by putting those life readings in sort of chronological order.
So they're spread out. Just a handful of these readings mentioned something about Atlantis, and they're spread out over several decades.
They're spread out from 21 until the time Casey died in the 40s.
Okay, so a couple of decades, a little more than two decades.
Right, about 20 years.
And none of these had any information that contradicted any of the others.
That's right. They all... It's kind of like a continuous story.
All right, we have a break coming up here in just a few seconds. And I want to talk some more about Atlantis when we come back. I want to talk about what you found in your research about Atlantis. And then I'm going to propose a question that is a bit speculative, but I'd like to get your opinion on that. Folks, our guest this evening is Edgar Evans Casey. He is the youngest son of Edgar Casey, the sleeping prophet, they called him, the most prolific seer of the 20th century. He is also a published author on the subject of Atlantis. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Edgar Evans Casey, and when we went away for break, we were talking about Atlantis. In your research for the book that you wrote, did you discover anything about Atlantis that was kind of an oh wow moment for you?
Well, the thing that amazed me was the fact that it talked about what a high civilization Atlantis was, that it was higher than our civilization now, that the equipment they had sounded like some of the things that we have now, airplanes and submarines and other things like that. I wrote that book in 1968, and that was 40 years after Edgar Casey died, and it took me about a year to get the information for it, and it took me a year to write it, but it was very successful. It was been translated into about 10 foreign languages, and it's still in print after all that time. It's called Edgar Casey on Atlantis, and in 88, that was 20 years afterwards, my daughter and a friend of mine, Dr. Douglas Richards, got together and wrote an update on it because there had been a lot of discoveries since between 68 and 88 that pointed to the possibility of Atlantis and the fact that the history it, you know, the history of how long people had been in South America and in the world, really, and in the earth is a lot different in 21 and 68 and 88.
Yeah.
Because of all the discoveries that I mentioned in between. So the the book we had was Mysteries of Atlantis, and it was kind of an update on the first book I wrote, and it was fairly successful too. It's been translated into 4 foreign languages, and it's in print now. Both of the books are still in print, which is amazing, and I made a little money off of them. So.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah, you know, this thing about Atlantis, I mean, this whole story about Atlantis really answers a lot of questions, or it could answer a lot of questions that people have about some of the things that have been found, for instance, in the ancient Mayan civilization. They have found in ancient Mayan excavation sites, they have found small golden airplanes. Now, there are archaeologists that their mind said, oh, it can't be an airplane. It's some kind of a ritualized insect. But aeronautics engineers have taken those small golden models and have scaled them up and built that exact model to see if it's aerodynamic enough to fly, and it flies. It's an airplane. It flies. And so that would fit with what you're talking about with the Atlanteans having had the ability to, you know, had flying machines and the ability to do high-tech stuff. Right off of the coast of Cuba, they a team of researchers did sonar imaging of the ocean floor, and they discovered a city and what appears to be a large pyramid. Now, they've never been able to go back and actually dive the area and research it, but they were able to image it with sonar, and the images, I think, are pretty clear. Would you suspect that would be part of Atlantis?
I think so, and I tell you why, because I contacted the man who did that expedition. It was a Canadian mm-hmm. researcher, and his wife was the one that did the technical looking down in the depth perception equipment they had. They had a contract with the Cuban government. It was a Canadian outfit, so they could get a better relation with the Cuban government than the United States could, but they were looking for shipwrecks, and they were sailing off of Cuba, off of the western tip of it, and in water about, well, they were looking in shallower water for the ships, but they were looking in water then about over 2,000 feet deep, and she said it was like going over a city, he said it was like going over a city. You could see what looked like streets and looked like buildings, and they did lower a camera in there. Of course, it was on the end of a line, and it wasn't a real good one, but they picked up some pictures of some columns that had inscriptions on them, and it was a language that nobody could recognize or read. And they wanted to go back, but in fact, they tried to get an agreement with the American Geological Society, the National Geographic Society, really, to get a submarine down there. And the trouble was that they had three people there. They had the outfit that was doing the diving, they had the Cuban government, and they had the National Geographic people, and they just, all three, they couldn't get together. So they never did go back, or never did have the money to, the government, the Americans were going to put up the money for it and have the submarine for it, but they never did go back. But I think that's certainly a possibility that it's a part of it. They also said that, the reading said that there would be evidences for Atlantic off of Bimini. And there have been some discoveries recently. One of them, probably the most recent one, was a geologist named Wyman Harrison, who took some Carver took some drills, some holes off the entrance to actually a little bay running into Bimini on the western side. And he went down about 18 to 20 feet. Now, you know, if you dig down in the ground, you get a, you go back in time and mm-hmm. you get a slant coming down from the surface right on down. And the funny thing about this one was, after about 12 to 14 feet, it dropped off from 2,000 years ago to 20,000 years ago in one exactly, which means that there was a land surface it below the ocean level now that was probably above the ocean level 20,000 years ago. And that agrees with the time Casey said Atlantis, the last Atlantis islands went down, and some of it was in the area of Bimini. So those two there now, there are still some people now, the ARE is sponsoring some research on trying to dive off of Bimini. They've discovered some structures, looks like structures, down off of Bimini, which, you know, if you could see whether they look like man-made, and maybe you could get some carbon dates from them and see whether they were, maybe they were part of Atlantis too. So hopefully in the future we'll get some information about it.
Well, that's pretty exciting news. I was not aware of this most recent development. I am, of course, aware of the what they call the Bimini Road. But
it's still under investigation. They really haven't done a lot yet. A lot of it depends on the weather and getting the money for the equipment and all that. But they're working on it.
All right. Now, I said I was going to ask you something that's really speculative. But and this, here's what it's based on. It's based on geology. And where something geological has happened before, it's fairly reasonable to expect that over time something similar would happen geologically. For instance, in a place where you've had earthquakes, then you can expect that at some point in the future, that same place is likely to have another earthquake, because the geology that's involved is probably still there and at some point is going to go active again. Same with volcanoes. Well, right now down in the Gulf, we have this this BP oil disaster. There are people, there are geologists who are writing and publishing things out on the internet saying that the ocean floor is beginning to crack open and that there's a huge methane bubble under this oil well, and that at some point they expect that it will explode out of that hole they drilled and cause the ocean floor to collapse. That sounds like something similar to perhaps what happened to Atlantis, and it is in the same general area. It's a few hundred miles away from Bimini, but it is in the Gulf. Do you expect that perhaps if that happens, it may cause the resurfacing of part of Atlantis?
Well, according to all the information I've been able to read in the readings, there wasn't any part of Atlantis in the Gulf. It was on the western side of Florida, not the eastern side, which is in the Gulf side. But it did say that it's possible that some portions of Atlantis might rise again, and that would probably be due to an earthquake, or since there were earthquakes before 20,000 years ago that sunk it, there might be some that something happened that would make some of it come up again. So I wouldn't be surprised if we did see portions of it rise again. So I don't think it would be where the oil well is.
Well, no, I don't think it's where the oil well is. But if you picture in your mind like a tube of toothpaste, and it's got the cap on it, it's not full. Some of the toothpaste is gone, but the cap is on the tube. If you squeeze on one part of that tube, then the other empty parts of the tube fill up with toothpaste.
Right.
And what I'm thinking is some kind of geological action similar to that, where if you have a collapse in the Gulf, it may put pressure on those other plates or whatever it is where Atlantis was, and sort of squeeze that up to the surface again.
Well, it probably could happen. The readings indicated that might happen in the future. It didn't give a date, but it sounded like it would could be in the next 20 years, 15, 10 years, 10, 20 years.
Can you imagine if that were to happen, and all of a sudden, rising up in the ocean, comes Atlantis with some of the ruins still there? Can you imagine the PhDs with eggs on their faces?
Yeah, that would be interesting. I'd like to see it happen.
I would too. Well, now you've been involved. I won't get into this right now because we're only 20 seconds away from break. When we come back, I want to talk about your involvement with the ARE and what is it doing, what is its work, what is its mission, and how can it help folks who are interested in Edgar Cayce. Certainly there are thousands upon thousands of people interested in the work of Edgar Cayce. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Edgar Evans Cayce, youngest son of Edgar Cayce, and a published author with a very successful couple of books. And we're talking about the work of Edgar Cayce, and in talking about that, it's absolutely necessary that we talk about the Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is the organization that has carried on with the research into Edgar Cayce's life and readings and so forth. And you're on the board of trustees, are you not?
Yes, I am now. I'm a trustee emeritus, which means you can talk but you can't vote. But I've been a trustee emeritus for several years, and I was on it, the original board, when it first started. I guess to tell you about the ARE, you ought to know how it got started. You know, when Edgar Cayce was giving readings, he had a hard time finding a doctor that would follow him. And there was a doctor in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, a Dr. House, that could do it, but he wasn't. I mean, a lot of the people that had readings were all over the country. And he had a reading on where he should go to build a hospital, because some stockbrokers in New York had gotten some readings from him, and they agreed to put up the money for a hospital that he could that they would build, and it would be a place where people could go and get treatment. And he said the readings, he had a reading about where to go, and it said Virginia Beach. And so we moved to Virginia Beach in 1925. And they built a hospital there in 27-28. It was on 67th and Atlantic, took up a block between 67th and 68th. In that time, they were only about two houses between Cape Henry and Virginia Beach, and Virginia Beach hadn't incorporated Princeton County. It was more like 5,000 people living there, with maybe 10 or 15,000 come down there in the summer. Until now, it's the largest city in Virginia. But what he did, they did build a hospital there on the top of the hill. This it was Dr. House came from Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and became the physician there. And for about a year or two, they treated people there, and it was very successful. It was a place that people could come and have readings and then have the treatments followed right there, and a lot of patients came through. Well, in 28 and 29, Casey told the Blumenthals, the stockbrokers, that to get the money out of the market, that it was going to be a big depression. And they just kind of laughed and said, no, he doesn't know anything about the stock market, that we're not going to do that. And they didn't, and they lost all their money in the stock market, and that they were still paying on the hospital, and they decided to sell the building and shut down the hospital. So Casey, I guess when he got the hospital there, it was one of his happiest days. And when they sold the property and sold the hospital and stopped it, it's probably one of his saddest. But he said one thing. He made some statements about the future, but this was one thing he said that really happened. He said, you know, this thing will never be a success at anything what it was intended for. And some of the best business people at the beach, they had that thing. They tried it as a motel. They tried it as the Serranos had it. The Navy had it. Nobody could do anything with it. And finally, they decided to, the last people that had it, decided to sell it. And all the members in Virginia Beach that had had readings got together and bought it back. And I don't think they had enough money to pay the interest on the loan, but they did it, and everything turned around. It started, he started getting more readings. They started getting money for the association, and they decided they called themselves the ARE, Association for Research and Enlightenment. And they built another building down on the below the old hospital building, and so they had office space in two places, and they had a place to keep the readings, and they decided to try to index them. And what they wanted to do, since Casey died and they weren't able to give any more readings, they figured there were a lot of readings that could still help people. In other words, if you could take all the readings and get them together and see whether there was a particular treatment for epilepsy, or if there was a particular treatment for some specific disease, maybe they could, person that had that disease could follow the treatments and maybe get well from them. So the purpose of the Association for Research and Enlightenment was to make the readings available for anybody that wanted to read them. And they didn't charge people for them. The association, they had a membership in the association that was a fee, but the people could come there and look at the readings, and anybody could come in and look at them and read them and look at all the ones on a particular subject and see what they were doing. And that's still true today. So, and they are a one thing that's kind of trying to start right now is some work on particular diseases, and one of them would be epilepsy. And they have they've raised a little bit of money, and I think they're going to start some experiments to maybe try to develop a treatment that will help anybody with that disease. So that's the purpose of the ARE.
And it's still open for people to come and read the readings and to research the papers. People can still do that, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm 92 now, and my wife's 90, and we had our 68th anniversary last Sunday.
So congratulations.
We've been getting along pretty good. I still play volleyball three times a week. We call it volleyball, because you play it in a handball court and bounce it off the wall, so it's a little faster than volleyball, but it's good exercise, and it keeps you in shape. Anyway, that's the story of the ARE and how they what they're doing now, and I think they're trying to do a good job, make it available to anybody that wants to come there and seek help.
Did Edgar Cayce ever give any readings that mentioned what today we call UFOs or extraterrestrials?
In those days, I don't think there was any. The UFOs came out after he died, and nobody ever asked about it. He said that there was life in the universe in other area, other constellations. I mean, the universe is a pretty big place, and there's millions of stars and galaxies and planets a long ways away. Now, he said there was life in the universe in other spots, but he didn't mention UFOs.
What about his health? In giving these readings, did it affect his health personally?
Only if he tried to do too many. He used to get a normal way he did readings twice a day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And sometimes when things were rough, he would go a week or so without having any, or go several days. On the other hand, after the book came out, probably the best book about Edgar Cayce is There Is a River. It was written by Tom Shugrue, who was Hugh Lynn's, my brother's roommate in college. And Tom used to work for the American Magazine and Hearst newspapers. And he got sick, and he went from about 180 down to about 80 pounds. He was paralyzed from his neck down. He could turn his head, but he couldn't move anything else. And the doctors couldn't do anything for him. They said, nothing we can do for you. You don't have long to live. You just go somewhere and die. His wife brought him down to Virginia Beach, and I helped my brother carry him upstairs. And he stayed there with us for months or so that while he got readings and while he got well, he wrote the book, There's a River, after he got well. He never did get so he could walk without crutches, but he did get able to go back to his job and even made a trip to the Mideast after that. So the fact that he was there and knew Dad and knew Mother, and he was able to talk to Hugh Lynn and myself about the readings, and he had readings that helped him. Why, he had first-hand experience with Edgar Cayce and his readings, and the fact that he had that close experience with him, why, I think his book is more accurate than there have been a lot of books written about him, articles written about him, but most of the people that wrote him was after he died and never knew him. And I think this book is probably one of the best.
All right. We're only about 20 seconds away here from break. And when we come back from this break, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to open up the telephone lines and allow you to call in and talk with Mr. Cayce. If you have a question or a comment, we want you to join the conversation. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here, and you have my most sincere sympathy for whatever it is that dragged you away from that first hour, because you've missed several universes of information. But we're glad you're here now. We're talking with Edgar Evans Cayce. Edgar Evans Cayce is the youngest son of Edgar Cayce, without debate, I think, the single most effective, best known, and most likely the most accurate seer or clairvoyant of the 20th century. All right, we are going to begin taking telephone calls, and let me, for those of you who are watching, the telephone numbers are appearing on your screen now. For those of you listening via computers, radios, cell phones, iPods, or whatever other method you have found to listen to this show, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. In the U.S. and Canada, I have a toll-free number that you can call. If you have to pay long distance to call us, you can use our toll-free number. It is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for out there, but I have the flash message option for you. So if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada, you can call us at our main number, or you can go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down, and you will find a link that says flash message. You can type in your question or comment there. Let's go to the telephone, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Tony from Denver.
Hello, Tony.
Hello. Mr. Casey, do you agree with David Wilcock when he proclaims himself your father's reincarnation? And I have one more question, please.
I don't really know him, and I haven't heard of him, anyone that's claimed to be Eddie Casey. I've heard of somebody that claimed to be Eddie Casey, but I haven't had any personal contact with him, so I really couldn't have an opinion about it, though I don't think Casey has come back yet.
And my second question, when your father gave past life readings, did he ever find someone who had previously lived on a planet other than Earth?
If he did, he didn't mention it. He said that between incarnations, that the souls go to other places, but he didn't say that they had incarnations there, because I don't think any of the planets in this solar system really would support life in this, in our same form right now.
Thank you very much.
All right, Tony, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. That's the number here in the studio. You can call it from any place on planet Earth. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hello, Rex from Miami.
Hi, I had a couple questions. One thing I was curious about was, did Edgar Casey ever do a life reading on himself?
I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you.
Did Edgar Casey ever do a life reading on himself?
Oh, yes. He did.
Yeah, what kind of information did he give?
Well, he gave what he was, or what the kind of work he did in the previous incarnations, and in one case, the recent incarnation, he was developing the type of psychic ability that he had in this last one.
All right, Rex, you have another question or comment?
When he gave life readings for people, how did he pick kind of what lives to talk about? I assume he just talked maybe a few lifetimes. Did he pick like the most recent or the most interesting, or kind of what do you think he was doing?
Could you repeat that, Kevin? I can't really hear him very well.
Yeah, when Edgar Casey gave life readings, and he was talking about people's past lives, how did he pick which past life to talk about?
I guess he gave life readings on the incarnations that affected the life now, or what were that affected his life in the past and that would have an effect on his life now, and suggestions for continuing to improve their soul, trying to get back to God.
All right. Rex, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889, or toll-free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hello. I am Mr. Casey.
Yeah, go ahead, Rusty.
Oh, okay. I just wondering with all the past lives. I mean, did that really have a big impact on whether someone like could get healing in this life?
Can you repeat it? I can't hear the other phone very well. Can you repeat the question, Kevin?
When he was doing these readings, did past lives really have any impact on whether a person could get healing in this life?
Yes, they did. The past life sometimes were the reasons for the person having the problems they were now, and sometimes they weren't. But the person could get, from Edgar Cayce's life reading, they would sometimes request a physical reading because sometimes he would mention the problem, but maybe it didn't go into as much detail as he would in a physical reading. So the person that had a problem that had a life reading, a lot of people had both life readings and physical readings that seemed to help them.
Okay, Rusty, you have another question or comment?
Yes. You mentioned about the Institute is still kind of helping people. Does that Institute help people develop their psychic ability, or is it just like the healing type of Institute?
The ARE, really, to help people, they let them go over the readings on the subject that they are interested in getting help for. But they also have lectures by people who have psychic ability or supposedly have psychic ability of different kinds and of how to develop some psychic ability. So that's not the main thing that they do, but they do have people that lecture on those subjects sometimes.
Okay, Rusty, thank you for the call. 623-444-5889. Or toll free at 888-223-4599. Or if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada, you can use our flash message option on the website. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Darren here, calling from Ireland.
Okay, tell us your first name again.
It's Darren. I'm calling you from Ireland.
Okay. I think you said Darren.
That's correct, Dave.
Okay. Darren from Ireland.
Yeah, that's right, Kevin. Just listening to what you've been saying in relation to a bit of U.S. history there, and all due respect, the U.S. may be the strongest might across this global planet. However, I agree with you totally that no force can resolve any matter, any problems.
Okay. I really appreciate the call, but that's not what the show is about. All right, 623-444-5889. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Stefan in Quebec City, Kevin.
Hello, Stefan.
Hello. Mr. Cayce, I was wondering if your father had any readings on the current events going on in the world, and what would be his... What did the reading say about where we would be going at the end of it all? Did he talk about a second coming of Christ or a return of consciousness or something to that akin?
Can you repeat that?
Yes. What did your father's reading say, if anything, about where everything is going in our present time? Did he say anything about a second coming of Christ or a return of consciousness or anything like that?
I think he mentioned a lot of these things were possible. The main thing he said about the future was that it wasn't fixed and that we could change it. And it would depend, a lot of it depended on the actions or the coordinated actions of all the people in the world and what they were thinking and doing and working on.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you, Mr. Cayce.
All right, Stefan. Let me quickly mention that in the members area, we have a group of folks in the chat room, and if you're one of those folks who loves to be in chat rooms and you'd like to enjoy chatting with other folks who are listening to the show, it's in our members area, and you just log in and chat, okay? It's moderated by Mike from Kentucky. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, speak of the devil, Kevin, and here he is. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Well, hello, Mike from Kentucky.
Thanks for that intro, and I hope Stefan heard it, and I hope he joins the room.
Okay.
We'd like to have him in here also. Mr. Casey, I've read probably about 15 or 20 books about your father's life, starting with There Is a River, and so I am very comfortable with what he knew. I can't remember, though. Did he say that he would reincarnate again in this time?
What was the question?
Did your father ever say that he would reincarnate in this time?
I think there was a reading that mentioned something about it, but here again, he always said the future wasn't fixed and that it depended on so many things that were going on right now.
Okay, I won't take up any more time. Thank you for answering the question, and I'll let the phone lines go so I can come in. Thanks, Kevin.
All right, thank you for the call. 623-444-5889. Now, that number works. You can call it from anywhere on the planet. Or you can, if you're in the USA or Canada, you can give us a call toll-free at 888-223-4599. And we are talking about Edgar Casey, and we are talking about his life and work, and also what Edgar Evans Casey has been associated with throughout his life, as the youngest son of Edgar Casey. How has this fame, if you will, affected your children and grandchildren?
Well, of course, the grandchildren haven't had any readings because all they came along after Dad died, and so did the children. My son did get a life reading before Dad died. My daughter was born after he died, so she couldn't get one. But I think it seemed to fit him, and it seemed to describe his job. He's just retired now, and he's had a very constructive life. He worked for a company that made baggage handling equipment and for airlines, and also baggage inspection equipment. And he enjoyed it and I think that's the thing, is getting a suggestion of what kind of occupation to take that would you'd be happy in. So I think people that are happy in their job are the ones that enjoy life. I know it worked for me.
Mm-hmm. Now, you spent your life working primarily as an electrical engineer, right?
Right, for the power company. You start at the bottom in the power company, and you work up. You learn how to dig post holes and draw drawings and go around and with the meter department, and you go through all those sections, and I went through them all, and I ended up with a pretty good job. I was director of engineering and planning for the Eastern Division. The Dominion Power had four divisions, north, south, east, west, and the headquarters in Richmond, and I was had the good job of directing the planning and for an engineering work for the Eastern Division.
Now, when your dad did your life reading, and he mentioned that in a past life you had been on Atlantis, you'd been a resident of Atlantis, did he tell you what your occupation was at that time in Atlantis?
Yeah, I don't like to discuss personal past life readings for myself.
Okay.
I'm telling somebody else, but he did say of what kind of occupation I had and what it would, how it would affect me in this life and what to do about it. In fact, he said I knew my present wife in a past life. And we've had a very happy marriage. As I said in the beginning here, we had our 68th wedding anniversary last Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, and congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
That's quite rare these days.
Yeah, some people don't live that long.
That's true. In his readings of we've talked a lot about Atlantis here tonight, but in his readings, life readings, did he mention much about people having past lives, say, in Egypt?
Oh, yes. He had, he would go back and start at the most recent incarnation, which sometimes was in this country, or not, some people hadn't been over for a few years since their last incarnation. Some of them are much longer than that. Depended on the person and his history, but he would start with the most recent incarnation and then go back. And a lot of the people that, I guess it was the fact that the people that were together in a past incarnation were attracted to together in this incarnation, because a number of the people that became ARE members had incarnations, similar incarnation in similar places in the past. In Egypt particularly, that was one where a lot of people had incarnations, and in Atlantis, some of them in Atlantis. So not everybody that had a life reading had an incarnation in Atlantis, but a number of them did.
At the time when your dad began doing these life readings and began talking about incarnations and reincarnations, this is not something that Americans knew much about. It would have been something very new to most people in America at that time. And America was decidedly more religious then than it is today. How was that received? Was it received okay, or did he catch a lot of flack from religious folks?
Well, I guess it would depend on the particular religion or a particular church, because a lot of churches, of course, Christian churches, Catholic churches too, would follow the Bible, and the Bible didn't mention if it did, it's probably not in there now. It didn't mention a belief in reincarnation. So there are other civilizations. I mean, China and Japan, Hindus had belief in reincarnation.
But did he catch a lot of flack for that, or was it just not a big issue?
I guess it depended on the church, and he didn't have any... nobody was running around with signs here that say, don't believe this man, he talks about reincarnation. Nobody's write article in the paper about it. But I know maybe if he had some flack about it, but he didn't have a lot. Some people, they didn't have any problem at all with that church and reincarnation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, it depends on a whole lot on how a person views the Bible and how they interpret it. There are people that say that there's no conflict with the Bible and with the idea of incarnation. And, of course, there are some that say there is a huge conflict. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Victoria from Washington State.
Hello, Victoria.
Mr. Casey, can you hear me?
I can barely, but Kevin can repeat your question.
Speak normally, and if he can't hear it, I'll take care of it.
Okay. I was wondering if Edgar Casey ever mentioned anything about he's not an apostle, but Saint Paul, at the time of Christ, did he ever say anything about him, you know, being the head of the church and you kind of taking over, or Peter, Saint Peter? Did he talk about the Catholic Church, any formation about that and the intention of Jesus at that time?
Well, I could hear most of your question. The thing is, so many different people had life readings, and they mentioned a number of incarnations that some did mention the different churches, and some did mention, I don't recall whether he had any incarnation on someone who was Paul or not, but I know he did have one on some of the disciples, and he did have readings on people that had been mentioned in the Bible before.
Okay, Victoria, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
All right. We are about 20 seconds away. No, we're not. I looked at the clock wrong. We have time for one more call before break. 623-444-5889. And if the phone were to ring right now, we could put you on the air. If you call just a few seconds from now, we'll have to put you on hold and let you hold through the break. His readings, Casey's readings, really didn't deal a whole lot with religion, did they?
Not unless somebody asked a question about him.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever say where his information was coming from? Did he know?
Yes, he could see when he was in that state, he could go back into time. It was like he was there looking at it. Like he was there, because he would describe, sometimes he would describe the place the person was in at a time, and what the temperature was like, or what the civilization was like then, and it was just like he was going back in time and seeing what was happening then. Now,
all right, we have to step away for break for just a couple of minutes. We'll be back with Edgar Evans Casey right after this, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Edgar Evans Casey. And let's go straight to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. I got a couple questions for...
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Casey. The first one is, what would you say is your brother's... or your dad, I forget, most profound prediction or vision that has come true that pertains to humanity in a whole?
How's that again?
What would you say is your dad's most profound vision that has come true pertaining to humanity?
Well, let's see. He always said the future wasn't fixed, and I've said one of the few things that I've heard him say, and he said this in, not in a reading, but in his waking state, was when the hospital was sold, and he looked like everything, all his work was coming to an end as far as the physical readings were concerned, and he said, you know, it'll never be a success, but what is it intended for? And it did turn out that for a year there, he was without a hospital, and the readings came down because they couldn't get treatments, any place to get treatments. But when they bought the place back and started up the association to give readings again. Then he come back, and they were very successful, and the place was a success. I'm trying to think of something that he said as far as making a prediction, but I can't remember. You know, he didn't really make predictions so much. So when people would ask him questions about it, he would, you know, just say that it depended on so many things that.
All right, Terry, do you have another question?
Yeah. Well, I kind of answered it there. I was going to ask him that. You know, what was the most profound prediction or vision that he's seen that hasn't come true yet? But you know, he kind of said that, you know, he didn't really make predictions and seen. So I guess we'll have to leave it go with that.
All right, Terry. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889 is our main number here. And if you have a question or a comment for Edgar Evans Casey, that's the number to call. If you're in the USA or Canada, we do have a toll-free number if you need to call me toll-free. It is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for you there, but I do have the Flash Message feature on the website. You can go over to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says Flash Message. And, Mr. Casey, we do have a flash message from Nicholas in the United Kingdom. And he wants to know if your father ever discovered information that he felt could not or should not be disclosed to humanity.
I don't remember any case. Of course, I listened to a lot of readings, but... I never listened to all of them, and since there are several thousand readings, I don't know whether that was so or not.
Now, I have heard that when he was in this trance state and was doing a reading, that he often would say, we can see this, or we can see that. Did you hear him speak that way? And if so, who is we?
I don't know. Remember him talking like that. He usually just answered the questions pretty normally, like any other person would answer a question. So all the readings were, you know, for different people. And I remember one time it sounded like he was there looking at the situation, because I remember one time a person had a reading, was supposed to be in his apartment in New York at the time of the reading. And mother gave him a suggestion for the reading and said, you will have before you the body of so-and-so who is at this particular place in New York. And dad lay there a few minutes and said, he's not here. He's on a bus coming across town. Says there's a lot of traffic and the bus is late. Said he'll be here in a few minutes. We'll wait. And he laid there for about 10, 15 minutes, didn't say a word. All of a sudden he said, he's come in now. And he proceeded to give the reading. When he did that, my brother got up and went in the other room and called the man on the phone and told him what dad had said. And the man said, you know, that's exactly right. Said, I knew I was supposed to be in my apartment, and I was on a bus, and the bus was slow with a lot of traffic, and I just this minute walked in. Now, that is a beautiful piece of, I guess you would call it clairvoyance, of seeing things at a distance that turned out to be exactly true, like he said. I don't know whether that's not the example of what you wanted, maybe, but that's the kind of thing that Eddie Casey would see a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times in giving a reading, he would describe, he said, this man is playing with his dog. He's got a beautiful cherry tree in the yard, or something like that. And like he was seeing something, like he was right there seeing something at a distance. And we'd always, of course, write the person or call them on the phone and say, do you have a cherry tree in your yard? Or what were you doing at the time of the reading? And we never knew it to be any different than what Casey said it was. So that's kind of interesting, I think, of how what he could see when he was giving a physical or life reading.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Ray from Orange. Good evening.
Hello, Ray.
Yeah. Hey, this is very exciting tonight. I had a really good question after a couple of programs you had about Coral Castle and the Freemasons. And I wonder if Edgar knows anything about his father and giving a reading as to what the organization was really about. And I'll go off the line for the answer.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Did your father ever give any readings about what the Freemason organization is all about?
He may have had readings on people who are members of the organization. I don't remember any particular reading about the Freemason organization itself. Now, I'm not saying there's not one. I mean, there's thousands of readings up there, and of course, I've never read them all. I've read all the ones that mentioned Atlantis, but that's just a small part. And I don't know, and I used to listen to a lot of them, though I never listened for all of them because a lot of times I wasn't home. I was away in the Army for 5 years in World War II. And of course, I didn't give the earlier readings before I was born, so I don't really know whether he ever mentioned Freemason organization or not.
Did you know when he first began doing the readings, the ability to do audio recordings was in its infancy. By the time he passed away, audio recording was not in its infancy. Were any of the readings ever recorded on audio?
All the, about 99% of the readings were taken down in shorthand and then typed up.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were one or two readings that were recorded on audio. The ARE would know that and would probably have a copy of them if they were. So
that would be fascinating to be able to hear him actually do it. All right, now let me ask you this. You said when he would come out of his trance state, come out of the vision or whatever, he would not remember anything about it.
That's right. He wouldn't remember anything that he said in that state. It was just like he was asleep.
Did he ever have his stenographer read back to him what he said?
Oh, you mean during a reading?
No, after he came out of the state, did he have the stenographer read to him what he had said during his trance?
I don't think he, I mean, he couldn't do that for every reading. He didn't do it. I mean, it would have been, it wouldn't have meant any, I don't think he had the time to do it or didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I know he could always read the reading at what she'd taken down after she typed it up. And some readings that if he were interested in the particular reading, I guess he would read it. And his stenographer was pretty good. She didn't make many mistakes in what she wrote down and what she typed up.
Did where I was headed with this is I wonder if as he read some of the notes of the readings that he had done, I wonder if there was ever anything that he came across that surprised him. Did he ever react to it as though he were surprised?
I guess he probably did at times. It would be it might have been when he was reading his own reading. Mm-hmm. He had life readings on himself. And I don't know. I can't remember things like that because most of the readings that I listened to, I don't remember. I don't remember him saying anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
But
all right. Now let me go back to Atlantis for just a moment, because you've read all of these. You've read the transcripts of all of these life readings that had anything to do with Atlantis. What did you find to be the most remarkable thing he said about Atlantis?
Well, I think the fact that it was such a high civilization and that the people had made such inventions and were using them, and that that civilization, when Atlantis went down, the people, Atlanteans, went both ways, east and west. Some of them came into Africa and Egypt, and some of them came into South America and mixed with the people there. And it was just interesting. And
when you say they had such high civilization and high technology, what are some of the things he said that they were able to do? You mentioned airplanes or aircraft they could fly. What are some of the other high tech things that he mentioned?
Well, he said that they had things, but just about all the technology we have now, some better. That we had submarines, that they had automobiles, or equivalent of automobiles. They had flying craft. They had something that sounded like the atomic bomb.
Ooh, we're going to pick up there when we come back. That wasn't a good thing for them to have. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Edgar Evans Casey, and fascinating discussion of the life and work of Edgar Casey. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are on final approach. That means we only have a few minutes left in this show. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, and the toll-free number is 888-223-4599. Let me take a quick check right now. Let me take a look at the flash messages. Okay, we're good to go there. And if you have a question or comment and you have not called in yet this evening, you have just a few minutes in which you can call in and ask your question or make your comment. Now, before we went to break, you were talking about they had the Atlanteans, according to Edgar Casey's information, had something similar to the atomic bomb. Were they a warlike people?
They had two different groups in the toward the end of the last, when the last islands went down, that were fighting each other, and they were having, I guess, like a civil war, and that happened really close to the time the last islands went under. So they weren't peaceful all the time among themselves. they did have a very high civilization, and they had they traveled all over the world. They went to the Far East, and they went in South America and Africa. And when the last islands went down, the nations went both ways. Some of them came into South America, and some of them came into Africa. And of course, 20,000 years ago, we don't have a history of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So we don't really know, but the more they dig back into the past of the civilizations in the Mayan civilization, the other civilizations in South America, and some in Africa, you're beginning to get the fact that people were in the earth longer ago than we thought they were. I know since the first readings were given, and I know the history of the people in America, well, they've been here a lot longer than we originally thought.
Yeah, that is pretty well established now. All right, our final call of the evening. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's Brian from Burnaby.
Hello, Brian.
And hi. I remember, Mr. Casey, reading your father's biography years ago, when I remember that he spent a little time in jail because the authorities thought he was practicing medicine without a license, and I wonder how that experience affected him, because I thought that must be quite disconcerting, and I think it's very sad that that thing should happen.
So, the question, Mr. Casey, is Brian, our caller, read that your dad spent a little bit of time in jail because the authorities thought he was practicing medicine without a license, and how did that affect him?
Well, what happened, I remember when that happened, I was at home, and he was they were up in, I forget where it was, whether it was in Ohio or was up further north, it was up there somewhere, and they had two women that came in from the police to get a reading, and when he gave them a reading, well, they claimed that you know, he was practicing medicine without a license, but he didn't spend any time in jail. He went before the judge, and they couldn't prove anything that he said was wrong, so they let him go. And the newspapers played it up because his secretary was up there, and they said psychic caught with secretary, and it showed a picture of him, and the secretary just showed him, the secretary was on one side, his wife was on the other, and they didn't show his wife in the picture, they just showed her hand, and so they said psychic caught with Bond secretary, and they were just trying to make a thing of it, and his wife was right there, and they didn't show it in the picture, so that was kind of the way the thing was, but nothing happened to it. That he came on home safely, didn't get any jail time, and they didn't, the reading that he given was never, I don't know what happened to it, but it wasn't anything that they could prove one way or the other.
All right, Brian, thanks for the call. Yeah, well, you know, the media in this country have been warping the truth and the facts for about as long as there's been a media in this country. You know, it seems like it's gotten worse, but that's been going on for a long time. And that's the reason, Mr. Casey, I refer to them as lamestream media instead of mainstream, because they can lie and get away with it.
Well, some of them do.
Some of them do. They certainly do. Well, listen, I have just been fascinated for this entire 2 hours, and the 2 hours is almost gone. I want to tell everyone that if you click on Mr. Casey's photograph that's on my website, if you click on that, it will take you to the website of the Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is the organization that we've talked about here this evening, the one that has carried on the work of Edgar Casey, the one that Edgar Evans Casey serves as a trustee emeritus, there's a lot of great information there, a lot of very interesting information. Mr. Casey, I want to thank you for being with us this evening, and let me ask you this. If you were to look at your dad's life and everything that he said and everything that he was about, and you distilled it down into one message for the world, what would that message be?
I guess this would be that you should try to live your life to get back together with God.
That is both profound and simple. It's a simple message, but it's profound. Was he a particularly religious man?
I think he read the Bible once for every year of his life. And he used to teach Sunday school in a church here. And he was he knew the Bible pretty well as any preacher you ever heard. So I think he was interested in getting people to think about life and think about the purpose of life and how they should live every day.
How old was your dad when he passed away?
65, I think.
65. Well, in 65 years, he certainly packed in a lot of information for the world and for people and service to people, enough that people are still talking about him long after he's passed from this life. And he is truly an amazing man, and I must say, so are you. Quite an amazing man, an amazing family. And I appreciate you giving us your time.
I really have, and I hope I've answered some of the people's questions. So I don't know whether I've answered them to their satisfaction or not, but I tried.
Well, you've done a tremendous job, and I appreciate it. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. I'd like to speak with you for just a moment after we go off of the air. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.